Welcome to The Truth About Lending. I'm Melinda Payne, the president and owner of The Truth About Lending. I've been a licensed mortgage broker for over 25 years and bring you clear and straightforward insights on everything from securing your initial home purchase to refinancing your house or obtaining condo financing in Florida's dynamic lending market. Now let's get into The Truth About Lending. No, you're not alone. I'm gonna make this place your home. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this week's Lunch and Learn. This week, we're talking about expectations versus reality with regards to multifamily properties and purchasing and investing in those type of properties. So let's start out by first asking the question, what is exactly a multifamily for residential purposes? Okay, and let's just kind of understand the differences. A multifamily property that is still eligible for residential financing. I know there's a lot of words in there. We're going to backtrack here, but a multifamily property that's still eligible for residential financing is a property that is between 2 to 4 units. Now, the reason why I want to really differentiate here is that once you go over a 4-unit property, so 5 units and above, that becomes a commercial property. It still could be multifamily, but it's commercial. And that's a different type of loan and a completely different discussion. So we're not going to talk today about commercial loans. We're going to keep it in the realm of residential properties because the terms for financing are generally easier. The interest rates are generally better. And people do at different points purchase these properties to live in themselves as well. So we're going to have a discussion today regarding 2 to 4 unit properties. So that's typically a duplex, a triplex, or a fourplex. So anything that's 5 units or higher, we're not talking about. It's a commercial property. It's a different conversation. We certainly have resources to help you, but please give us a call personally to talk to us about that particular question. Okay, so today we're talking about 2 to 4 unit residential properties, and we're going to really kind of have a discussion regarding occupancy of somebody's going to live in the property versus somebody's purchasing the property as an investment property. So we're going to break it down into 2 segments for the purpose of the show. We're first going to talk about occupancy as far as somebody living in the property. And then we're going to move on to if you're purchasing the property as an investment property. So let's first talk about if you are looking to purchase a duplex or a triplex or a fourplex, and you're going to live in the property, then what is required? Now, actually, let's just take one step back in reference to the property types. Let me just backtrack one second. Now, I want to make sure that you understand when you're looking at purchasing a property that is a multifamily, you really need to double check that it truly is a multifamily property. For example, how many meters does it have? That's usually a good indicator of how many units the property is. Was it a house that was converted to multifamily? Was it a duplex that was changed into a fourplex? It's very important to know what the city or the county has it as legally. Because when we go to do the loan, if the appraiser tells us this is legally a duplex or legally a triplex, it's going to change what we can offer you as far as the potential rental income that can be used. So let's just take a step back. Regardless of the occupancy intention, regardless of whether you're going to live in the property or not live in the property, it's very important to discuss with your agent, or if this is a for sale by owner, to discuss with the county or the city, what is the property's current use? And then we know if our expectations are realistic. So very important, make sure that you double check that with the appropriate people. Now let's talk about buying a multifamily property with the intention of living in the property. Now, There are many, many people who are interested in doing this, and that's great. That's wonderful. But one of the things that I just want to make sure that we're very clear on from the beginning is buying a property with the intention of turning it into an investment property and stating that you're going to live in it is occupancy fraud, which is mortgage fraud. So you really want to be very sure you're going to live in the property, especially even more so with multifamily. There is a heightened sense of checking. Of course, with any property you want to, but there's really a heightened sense of post-occupancy checks that what you tell us as a buyer is really what's going to happen. So if you're looking at purchasing a multifamily property and you think you're going to buy it with an FHA loan or a conventional loan with low down payment, and turn around and rent all the units, that's not allowed. That is mortgage fraud, and that is absolutely not allowed. Now, if you're purchasing a property and you 100% intend on occupying one of the units of the property, you can purchase a fourplex or any of the multifamily options, duplex, triplex, fourplex, with an FHA loan with 3.5% down, or with a Fannie Mae conventional loan with 5% down instead of the 3.5% down. Now, that's recently changed. Fannie Mae did have a higher down payment requirement until very recently. So now that down payment is down to 5%. Now, there has been some discussions in the past where you guys have heard me say Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, it's like McDonald's and Burger King. They're both hamburgers. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are both mortgages. They're both conventional type of mortgages. But in this case, Freddie Mac has higher down payments for 2 to 4 units that are anywhere from 15 to 25% down. So it's really important if you're wanting to buy a property as a primary residence, that's 2 to 4 unit property, that it's, if you're looking for the lowest down payment, you want to be in either an FHA or a Fannie Mae loan. Okay. Now, there are a lot of people that are trying to understand how the rental income of the property will be looked at. So what happens is when you buy one of these properties as your primary residence, or really as whether you buy it as a primary or as an investment property, an appraiser is going to go out there. They're going to do a multifamily appraisal. But in addition to that, part of that normal appraisal process with multifamily is going to tell us what the potential rental income will be for the property itself. So the appraiser is going to go out there and they're going to say, hey, listen, Sarah, you're buying this fourplex for $1 million and we think it's worth $1 million. And so the value is good, but they're also going to say, by the way, we think that the potential rent or the fair market rent analysis says that you can get $2,000 a unit or $1,000 a unit or $4,000 a unit, whatever it is, whatever that potential rental income is what we are going to go back to your loan application and say, great, look at this potential rental income that Sarah is going to get because she's buying this fourplex. Now, if Sarah is going to live in the fourplex, we're going to ask her, which unit do you plan on living in? And then we're going to say, okay, units 2, 3, and 4 potential rental income combined are $8,000. Then a lender is going to take a 25% haircut off of that gross rental income. They're going to say, we are going to discount that $8,000 by 25% so that we can have a vacancy allowance. And they're going to use 75% of that $8,000 figure to give to Sarah, who is buying this fourplex, as potential subject property, the property you're buying, income. So it helps to offset your debt to income ratio, which is the debt that you have compared to your income. So we're giving you future income. It's a guideline that's allowed. Now, if there's leases on these other units and you're buying them with tenants and the leases are lower than what the appraiser said that is the potential rental income, unfortunately, they're going to use the lower of the two, and that could affect somebody qualifying for an FHA and Fannie Mae loan. And we're going to talk about other alternative income type of loans here in a little bit, but let's, for the sake of right this second, we're focusing on somebody is purchasing a multifamily property and has the intention of living in one of the units. That's what we're talking about right this second. And we'll jump over to the investment side of things here in a minute. Now, in reference to living in a multifamily property, like I just said, we can use the potential rental income on the property. That's not an issue, regardless of whether there are leases or not. Like I said, if there's a lease and it's a lower amount, unfortunately, we have to use the lower amount. But there's a certain test when it comes to FHA and 3 to 4 units, not for duplexes, but for 3 to 4 units. There's a certain test called a self-sufficiency test. And that test basically says, if Sarah were to not stay in the property tomorrow and the property had to support itself, would there be enough rental income from all 4 units or all 3 units or whatever the property type is to be able to support itself? Now, this is really important for you to know as a buyer if you're going to be purchasing one of these properties with an FHA loan, because we have found that once, especially in Florida, once you calculate in, if you are doing an FHA loan with a down payment of only 3.5%, once you calculate in the taxes, the insurance, the mortgage insurance, and then take 75% of all of the rental income, a lot of times it does not pass this self-sufficiency test. So you as the client may pass, you may have the credit, you may have the income, you may have great assets and all this other stuff, but there is this additional test with an FHA loan that a lot of loan officers don't know about it until it's too late, till you're too deep in the transaction. And this is one of the reasons why it's so critical for you to come to the truth about lending, because we know our rules. We know our guidelines. We're here to be able to guide you through this process. And these are important things for us to calculate or try to do our best to calculate, because some of these things are still in estimates at the beginning. Like, we're estimating what the appraiser is going to say and we're estimating the insurance. Those are things we're estimating, but at least let us try to run these figures in the beginning so that, you know, $1,500 later of appraisals and inspections and all this other stuff, you don't find out that there's a problem that we could have prevented or at least been aware of from the beginning and made sure that you were aware of. So again, if you're buying a multifamily property and you're going to live in the property with FHA, the down payment is 3.5%. And with Fannie Mae or conventional loans, it is 5%. Okay, so now we've talked about owner-occupied properties, multifamily. We're now going to move into investing in multifamily properties and what is generally required. So when you are investing in a multifamily property, you have an option of getting a conventional Fannie Mae loan as well, but you also have other options for other alternative income documentation and various different ways of being able to buy a multifamily property. So let's just take it from the best interest rate to the worst interest rate. We're going to look at it from that perspective. So if you are buying an investment property with a conventional Fannie Mae loan, the down payment requirement is 25%. Okay. This is for a 2 to 4 unit. It is 25%. Now, depending on a few different factors, there are reserve requirements that are also needed for really any type of investment property purchase, although there's a few different exceptions to this. And what are reserves? What exactly are reserves? So reserves are basically the lender wants to see that you have a certain number of months of the mortgage payment in an account somewhere to be able to show that you have a savings. This is not money you have to put anywhere. This is not money you have to put up or pledge. It's not like you're going to be restricted on what you could use the money for. It's just to basically show that if the crap hits the fan, that you have the money, the savings to be able to float the mortgage payment for a few months. For example, if there's vacancies or whatever the case may be. So with a multifamily property, the reserves can be, depending on the loan type, the reserves can be anywhere from 6 months to 12 months of the mortgage payment. So they're looking at principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, everything together, regardless of whether you're including the taxes and insurance with your mortgage payment or not. They're still looking at the true monthly cost of you owning that property. And then they're multiplying that times six or times 12. And they're saying, hey, Sarah, do you have that in your retirement account? Do you have that in a checking or savings account? Where do you have this money? So they can see it as reserves. Now, with a conventional Fannie Mae or even a Freddie Mac loan, the down payment and the reserves cannot be a gift. You cannot get a gift from a family member for the down payment. This is for an investment property. If you're purchasing it as a primary, that's a whole different ball of wax. Yes, you can get a gift if that's what your true intention is, to purchase it as a primary residence. But for an investment property, you cannot get a gift. It's very important that the funds are in your account for 60 days prior to you applying for the mortgage. Now, this is for a conventional loan. There are some alternative income documentation programs that we can look at, or even if you are documenting your income and you have a gift and we need to close with the gift, there are some portfolio loans or higher interest rate loans available that would allow a gift. But for the lowest interest rate, for a Fannie Mae conventional loan, you cannot have a gift. You have to have your own funds. It could be stocks, bonds, retirement accounts, but you have to be having your own funds for the down payment and for the reserves. Okay. Now, if it is an investment property and you're purchasing it through a conventional loan with a normal Fannie Mae loan, it cannot be purchased in an LLC. It has to be purchased in your name individually. It cannot be purchased in an LLC. If, and that's regardless of income type. So whether you are, there's only one income type for Fannie Mae, which is a fully document income loan. So if you are not doing a Fannie Mae loan, if you're not doing a conventional loan, and we are doing a alternative or portfolio loan for you, you can get a gift for a down payment. You can purchase a property in an LLC. But the difference is those loans typically have a higher interest rate, probably a good 2% higher than a conventional loan. And in addition to that, they generally have some type of prepayment penalty. So usually the standard prepayment penalty is 3 years to 5 years with these type of loans. And we always suggest our clients to pay some type of additional points to the lender. This does not go to us. This goes to the lender to be able to lower the prepayment penalty, to lower the prepayment penalty down to 1 year, because we think that the interest rates are going to go down and we don't want you to be stuck in a loan longer than a year. So it's important to understand that if you can document income, it's always better to allow us to try to see if we can fit you in a conventional loan, because the interest rate is 2% less, or maybe 1.75% less, and there's no prepayment penalty with a conventional loan. Now, with an alternative portfolio loan, you have a few options. You could document income, which would have a better rate than if you're doing a no income verification loan. And we're going to talk a little bit here about something called a DSCR loan. It stands for debt service coverage ratio. Now, a lot of people have been using this type of loan to buy investment properties, whether it was multifamily or not. Could have been a single family, could have been a condo, whatever the case may be. But a lot of investors have been using this type of loan. That entire loan is based on the potential rental income of the property and how much the debt service is covered by the ratio. That's why it's called debt service coverage ratio. In other words, if it's going to be a $5,000 mortgage payment and the potential rental income is $5,000, that's a 1-to-1 ratio. that's really great as far as the type of ratios for a DSCR loan. So there is an income alternative that you do have if you're an investor. We can use the potential rental income to offset the mortgage payment and then use that route. Now, there's even another loan that is even less documentation than that, which is called a no ratio loan. This is kind of like a no doc loan, but we still have to document assets. So really, there's no income. There's no rental income that we're basing anything off of. So as far as interest rates go, you would have the conventional loan first, which would be the lowest interest rate, and probably down payments around 25%. Then you would have a fully documented portfolio loan, but maybe there's a reason why you don't want to do a conventional loan. Like maybe you want to take title in the name of a corporation, but we could still document income. Okay. Those interest rates are probably going to be, if I had to guess, somewhere in the eights, high eights, depending on the loan and depending on the down payment. The more the down payment, the lower the interest rate. You might be able to get something in the sevens. It just depends. But those loans will have a prepayment penalty. And then on top of that, we would have the DSCR loans. Those are typically loans that, like I said, are no income verification loans. And we're using the potential rental income from an appraisal. So the appraiser is giving us the potential rental income and explaining to us what the potential income is for the property. Those loans do typically have a prepayment penalty that could be either bought out or bought down. And then on top of that, which would be the highest rate, those loans are no income or no ratio loans. Those are generally significantly higher. Down payments on those are usually 35 or 40% down. Again, there's also a prepayment penalty, and those could be significantly higher rates, maybe in the high nines to mid tens, depending on the overall situation. But that is where you're truly not even verifying anything and other than the assets. And so you have to kind of ask yourself, like, why would somebody do one versus the other? Well, when we're looking at a property, it really is going to be, for example, if we're looking at doing a DSCR loan where we think that the potential rental income could cover the mortgage payment, maybe we get the appraiser's fair market rental analysis and it comes back and says, the mortgage payment, the potential rental income is $4,000 a month, but the mortgage payment is $6,000 a month. So you're negative in that situation. And so maybe we, at that point, we say to ourselves, okay, based on all of the criteria of your loan, we need to change the loan type because you may or may not qualify. So it really depends on the situation. There are other factors involved, like basing rental income on short-term rental income versus basing it on long-term rental income, especially in Florida. There's a lot of properties that are short-term rental income driven, and it really kind of depends. You know, if you're a two-bedroom condo near the beach, short-term rental income seems realistic versus if you're a six-bedroom house out in the suburbs of Parkland or Weston or, you know, where Coral Springs or whatever, short-term rental income seems less likely. So there's a whole analysis that's done on the property type to determine whether or not you are looking at a property from a rental income that could be short-term or long-term. And then these are things that we discuss with the appraiser that we say, hey, Mr. Appraiser, send us a rental income analysis on short-term rental income, or send us a rental analysis on long-term rental income. Now, there's going to be situations where you may have a property that you are looking at that you're intending on doing short-term rental income for, but there's association restrictions. In that case, we're going to say, hey, we can't base this on short-term rental income because the association is saying that you have to do long-term rental in that particular property. So there's all kinds of questions and factors that go into play when we get into multifamily. There's also additional closing costs when it comes to multifamily. For example, an appraisal, depending on if it's a four-unit property or two or to three or four units, could be significantly higher than just a single family. You know, instead of being $600, it may be $1,000 or maybe $900, something to that effect. So there are additional costs with multifamily. Typically, surveys of the property, which are the perimeter of the property, are generally more expensive because there's more of a structure that they have to draw out. Title work can sometimes be a little bit more expensive because there may be things that they need to get from the tenants, like basically the tenants telling you if you're buying a property with a tenant, the tenant has to put it in writing what the current owner is holding for deposits, and everybody has to agree to protect you to make sure that everything transfers to you correctly. So it's really important to understand all of these things, all of these costs, way in advance of getting under contract with the property, because the last thing you want is to go and put a property under contract and have any problems, regardless of whether it's an investment property or primary residence. I think I've talked about this many different times. The truth about lending was born from the idea that you, the consumer, should be told the truth upfront as to what to expect. Just everything you need to know. I mean, the good and the bad, not just painting a rosy picture and making it sound like this process is going to be super easy. You have to understand the process. It's some things make no sense at all. And we're right there with you saying, gosh, this is ridiculous, but it doesn't change the process. So we need to make sure we're preparing you correctly up front. Inspections for multifamily property are going to be much more expensive than inspections for a single family house. And I just want to clarify something. Lenders do not have certain inspections that are required. We don't require you to do any inspections. In fact, the only loan that requires an inspection is a VA loan. So as far as we're concerned, if you choose the crazy idea of non-inspecting a house, that's your choice. We're not requiring you to do certain inspections. Of course, we think you should do an inspection. Of course, we think that everybody buying a property should inspect the property. So that is 100% something that we will encourage and support, but we can't force you to do the inspections. So the estimates that we send you do not include the inspection costs, because we're not required under law allowed under law to require you to inspect the house. So these are additional costs that you have to keep in mind. And inspecting a 3-4 unit or 2-4 unit property is expensive. I mean, if I had to guess, it's probably a good $1,000 to inspect a property that big. I'm not sure, but these are all things that I'm sure you need to know before you jump and start the process of looking for a property, and that you are budgeting accurately from the beginning as to what to expect, because you don't want to have surprises later on. It's so much better for us to overestimate things, to overestimate looking at things with a much more expensive thought in mind, to overestimate the insurance, to overestimate the cost of the appraisal. And if it comes back lower, great. You can use whoever you want to insure the house, but it's better for us to estimate these things higher. And then if it comes in lower, wonderful. Now, it's very important to understand, there's a lot of people who try to, but have the mindset that they can purchase a property as a conventional loan, with a Fannie Mae conventional loan, and later change the deed of the property to their LLC or to their corporation. Because remember what I said, you cannot do a conventional loan with a corporate buyer. Like, you have to buy it in your name personally. There are some very specific things in the mortgage documents you're signing that are stating that you're not going to change the ownership of the property. I highly encourage you to speak to an attorney, because if you think you're going to purchase it in your name and then change it to a deed in your corporation's name later on and not have a problem, that is not necessarily true. So you would need to speak to a real estate attorney about that. There's something called the due on sale clause that's within the mortgage documents that basically say, if you change the deed of the property, your mortgage is due. If you change the ownership, your mortgage can be called, can be foreclosed. Now, listen, if you're paying your mortgage on time, it's highly unlikely that's going to happen. But you still need to understand it's not as simple as just changing the deed of the property over. For example, let's say you have an insurance claim and the insurance policy is in your name personally because that's what the lender requires. And then they go to write a check to you and the lender because you've settled the insurance claim and now you're trying to get the insurance money to fix your property. And the lender says, hey, we checked your title and we see that you've moved it in the name of an LLC. So there's all kinds of things that could come up. Please do not just automatically think you could do that. We encourage you to speak to an attorney in reference to that. We are not real estate attorneys and we don't play them on TV. We are just here to give you advice from a lending perspective. And that is where our expertise ends. So on that matter, I think we're pretty much wrapped up for this week. We are very happy that you've joined us. If you have any specific questions regarding a scenario for yourself personally or for one of your clients, if you're an agent watching this, please reach out to one of our loan officers. You can reach us at 888-76-TRUTH. And of course, on our website, thetruthaboutlending.com. And please join us next week. We're going to be talking about understanding and a guide to all of the no income verification options that are out there for people who are self-employed or not self-employed, whatever the case may be. There's a ton of alternative loan options out there for people to take advantage. And remember, as always, please subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can get weekly updates once we do post our videos, whether it's these videos from the Lunch and Learn or from other things that we are doing. We would love to have you subscribe to our channel. Thank you so much and have a great week, everybody. Thank you for listening to The Truth About Lending. Stay up to date with all Florida loan and mortgage news by subscribing to our channel and help us grow so we can continue bringing you insight and advice. Please like, share, and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can find the links to all our social media profiles in the description. You can find extra resources on our website, thetruthaboutlending.com. If you have any questions about Florida mortgages, we are licensed and ready to talk to you today. Call us at 888-76-TRUTH. That's 888-768-7884. You can also email us at melinda@ttal.info or visit us at our website, thetruthaboutlending.com. Until next time, remember, the truth about lending is out there for you.
No, you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home.